This meeting is now being recorded.
And Lori, I'll let you take off from here right where you left off. The meeting has
Hello.
Begun.
Yes, I want to welcome everybody to Workstream 2, Guidelines for Standard of Conduct Presumed to Be Good Faith with Exercising Removal of ICANN Board Members. It's a lot to say, so we'll just, refer to ourselves as Guidelines for Good Faith Conduct. This is our first call. We'll have successive calls through the fall and hopefully be ready to produce a report. I don't know by Hyderabad, but certainly within the next few months. I'm asking if Brenda would take attendance of the members of the group and to ask for any updates to SOIs.
We will take attendance based on the Adobe Connect names. We do have one phone number listed ending in 1465. So
yeah, that's me. That's my dial.
Okay.
I couldn't connect to the audio. So
we'll just
fine.
Take attendance with the names listed. Thank you, Lori.
You're welcome. So I wanted to take this opportunity. Again, we're a small group. I think most of us probably know each other, but there are some members on this team that I don't believe I know, that I would introduce myself and ask the team to introduce themselves, and as part of the introduction, to state why you're particularly interested in this work stream, this particular subgroup. There are many subgroups diving into a lot of intense issues. I saw that this subgroup was a little on the lower end of subscription, so I am curious to a small group, what attracted you to this particular topic. My name is Lori Schulman. I work for the International Trademark Association. I'm the Senior Director for Internet Policy for INTA. I've been part of the ICANN community off and on since, I think, 2002. I originally started as a participant in NCUC and the MPOC, and I've been an advisor to PIR, which I believe many NCUC participants have over the course of years. I'm now working for INTA. I'm also treasurer of the IPC, so I'm very deep in ICANN policy and have been. I was a member of an observer to the CCWG and a member to the extent that I would follow calls and prepare position papers for my organization to take its positions accordingly regarding the efforts in the transition, particularly regarding accountability. I decided to become more active in Workstream 2 because I really feel this is where the rubber hits the road. This is where the deep change and knowledge I think that I possess as someone who's been around nonprofits and nonprofit governance for many, many years. Part of my background is as a general counsel to large U.S. nonprofits. I felt that my expertise in this area might be particularly helpful in Workstream 2. I chose this particular subgroup and volunteered to lead it because I believe this is where, again, the ultimate exercise of community power will happen, board removal. This is the extreme. This is where we get to have the accountability that we've been striving for. So I think creating the guidelines, standards, having them meet a test of good faith and diligence is extremely important and really the key, the foundation of which everything else sits. And so I'm very proud and honored to be part of the group. And if anybody would like to raise their hand to introduce themselves to the group, I would be most appreciative. Lido. Thank you for raising your hand. I'll call on Lido.
Okay. Thank you. I'm Lito Ibarra. I live and work in El Salvador, and I'm also part of the board, of the ICANN board. As a matter of fact, I am the liaison for this group and the board. Between a part of the community, of ICANN community and Latin American and Caribbean community, regarding all internet staff names and numbers mostly, I handle the .sb, CCTLD in El Salvador, and also I am part of Latin board, so I have to do something with IP addresses and ASN. So that's my background. I've been attending some ICANN meetings in the past. So now I'm here. Of course, I am interested in this group, both as a community member for the new accountability and the transition stuff, and also because currently I have the honor to be a part of the group. So that's my presentation. Thank you.
You're welcome. Alan?
Thank you very much. During the CCWG accountability, when we were talking about this, there was a strong push, particularly from the board or board members in any case, to say that we could only remove board members for a particular cause, and those causes had to be listed. I guess I was probably the main protagonist opposing that and saying that, it, in general, if we're likely to remove someone, it's going to be for a more ephemeral reason than they violated the law or something like that, which we don't really need special rules, but just that their direction does not coincide with what the group that appointed them is, or you know, a much more generic thing than a particular set of causes. So we ended up not having a requirement to have a particular reason or rationale for eliminating someone, which they could then perhaps oppose and, you know, defend their actions, but to simply have the group that is requesting the removal give their rationale for why, and that as guidance to these groups, we should put down some expected standards of behavior for what we expected of directors, and this is the group that was charged with doing that. And since I was a significant part in creating the need for this group, I'm here to talk about it. Thank you.
Okay. I have some responses to what Alan, but I'll leave them to the end, because I think that goes to sort of explaining the task. Cheryl, please introduce.
Thank you, Laurie. Thank you very much, Laurie. My name is Cheryl Langdon-Orr, and hailing from the Antipodes down in Australia. I've been involved in all sorts of things in ICANN for all sorts of years, pretty much since the dot of it. But from a work stream one CCWG point of view, this was one of the topics that I found of particular interest. I'm somewhat disappointed, Laurie, I must say, that it is such a small group, because I agree with you. I think this is where rubber hits the road. And, of course, having worked closely with Alan as another one of his ALAC capital M members in CCWG, now in Workstream 2 as well, this is a matter that our community has taken very, very seriously. So looking forward to doing good work on this.
Thank you, Cheryl. Aubrey.
Hi. My name's...
Whoops.
Sorry. I had music that automatically turned on when I started talking. My name's Aubrey Doria. I'm a researcher. I've been involved in various things at ICANN for a bit now. I've signed up for all the groups, and therefore I signed up for this one as well. Part of my reason for signing up for all of them was the ATRT connection and basically being there to sort of research any issues that might be related to ATRT content that are being discussed. I'm interested in all the topics. I'm kind of interested in a horizontal picture to what we're doing about accountability all the way through this process. And, I'm just interested to see what we come up with and to be helpful if I can. Thanks.
Thank you, Aubrey. Yulf. Hey, Yulf.
Oh, yes. Hello. This is Yulf Fasingas. Yeah. I'm the sort of non-com appointee to the sort of non-contracting house in the GNSO Council. And, of course, I'm very, very interested in the accountability in general, and it's of where really this is one of the groups that actually define clear criteria, I would say. So that's why I'm very interested in this specific one.
Thank you. Is there anybody else who'd like to speak? Thank you. If not, I'll go to the explaining the task. Because this is where I believe I want to respond to some of the comments that Alan made so that we have clarity on the team. I did not participate in the initial discussions on this. I read the report, the staff report. I've read the accountability proposals, all many hundreds of pages of it. And my understanding in terms of what this group has been asked to do, and it conflicts a little bit, I think, with what Alan has said, but maybe not, because maybe there's actually two work streams inside this group, and that's what I want to clarify. My understanding of the task is that in order to exercise the community power to bring in action to remove either one member of the board or any combination thereof or the entire board, that in order to do that and to be immune against a counterattack, a lawsuit from a board member, let's say for an accusation of defamation or any sort of accusation that a member of the empowered community or a member of an appointed member of an SOAC group is somehow legally liable for their action to try to remove a board member, in order to have the indemnity that's been built into the bylaws, and if anybody would like a clarification on what indemnity means, I would be happy to explain that. And Alan, I see your hands up, and when I finish my sentence, I will definitely ask you to chime in more so we can have a fulsome discussion. But my understanding is that in order for this indemnity, in order for a member of the community to be protected from this counterclaim, that there would have to be guidelines for how this action is brought. And reading the report, there were some proposed guidelines that talked about making sure that accusations are verified, making sure that diligence has been done in general, that whatever charges are being brought, whatever the charges are against a particular board member, that it's being done essentially in good faith and by the right people at the right time following the right process, and that it was up to this committee or this subgroup to decide what is the right time, place, process, and clearly enunciate them in understandable guidelines, hopefully not too legalistic, in order to remove a board member. To the points that Alan made initially when I read the remit of this group, I too had what I thought was a confusion. Oh, are we talking about what standards do we expect from the board? And from my point of view, as ICANN is still based in California, still subject to U.S. law, under U.S. law, there are three duties that a board member must exercise at all times in acting as a fiduciary for ICANN. They have a duty of loyalty, a duty of loyalty, a duty to obey, and a duty of care in how that, you know, they're obeying ICANN's bylaws and procedures, that there's a duty of care, and that would go to their fiduciary responsibilities and how they handle money, the budget, assets of ICANN. And loyalty, making sure that there's no conflicts of interest. This is my understanding of board fiduciary responsibilities in a nonprofit context in a California nonprofit corporation. That being said, ICANN is now embarking on a model of governance that is untested. I'm not aware of another organization that will have this specific type of framework, this specific type of community accountability with an empowered community rather than members, which is what you would traditionally find. So therefore, while the board members are still held to these very sacred duties, at the same time, there are issues here that may be, you know, unique to ICANN that we would also consider. To Alan's point, if a board member's been appointed by a particular interest or constituency in ICANN, and then the goals of that constituent not being met, is that a breach of duty of care? I mean, I think you could probably throw it in. Probably almost any instance could be thrown into one of those three buckets, duty of loyalty, duty of care, duty to obey. So I'm going to ask Alan to comment on sort of my comments and my understanding of what this task is.
Thank you. There is a requirement somewhere in the huge accountability recommendations that we draft expected standards for the board members so they know what they're expecting. Maybe it's not this group, and maybe I extrapolated incorrectly for that. You are correct that the report says that members of the community, and specifically designated members of the community, is not any random person who walks up. So each ACNS, each ACNSO will have to say who is it that is speaking on their behalf. Those people are indemnified by ICANN for any action taken against them as long as they are acting in good faith. Now, in my understanding of good faith is relatively simple. If I accuse Laurie of being an axe murderer with no evidence whatsoever, that's not acting in good faith. On the other hand, if I say I want to remove Laurie because she is not acting in accordance with how we believe the at-large director should be acting, that's a rationale which would stand. So, yes, we are expected to define good faith in a little bit more clarity than just my glib, one glib sentence, but that doesn't mean we are defining the causes, and explicitly there is no cause mentioned, because, cause for dismissal is something you can take legal action against, but rationale is required. And my understanding is there are no limits to what that rationale could be. And if we go back to the discussions at the time, there were a number of directors who even agreed that, yes, it could be something pretty frivolous, but it doesn't have to, be defended. So that's my understanding of the indemnification issue and what is within grounds and what is not. I'm not sure that's
okay,
fair.
I have a follow-up question then, Alan. So the board member says, okay, it could be for something frivolous, but as long as it's done in good faith, the charge could still move forward. I mean, is that the thinking that it could be for anything? I mean, I would imagine there's got to be a minimum standard, and I take a legalistic approach and saying, if a board member has breached any of these three duties that I just enumerated, that's a breach. That's a cause right there. And what constitutes that could be, an infinite number of behaviors. And one of those behaviors may be, I have not acted in accordance with the tenets of my constituency. Let's say I'm a member of the IPC and I get nominated to the board and I'm on the board and I say, yeah, let's get rid of the UGRP and all trademark rights and issues forever. I think my constituency would have a little problem with that.
Well, yes,
they may want to remove me.
I believe the example was used at the time was, if we want to remove our director for wearing purple pants, that is within our right to do.
Okay, but there needs to be a good faith process for how you reach that rationale in terms of defining.
We may come under ridicule from the rest of the community for removing a director for purple pants, but it is within our right to do it.
Okay.
Now, the only rationale, the only defense would be, demonstrating the person has never worn purple pants in their life, I guess, would be an adequate defense of that and counter to it. But that's the level of frivolousness which I believe could be contemplated should a group be stupid enough to want to exercise that. At least that's my understanding of the intent of the recommendation as it was written. Again, I may be wrong, but that's certainly my understanding.
Okay. So then my question becomes then, so the bar that we're creating, we're creating the bar on the mover's side, on the remover's side. We're going to set a bar, whatever that is, high bar, low bar, medium bar. But in terms of what the board behavior is, we don't look at that behavior, that's agnostic at this point. Your point. It can be any behavior, but as long as we are following our prescribed procedures, our prescribed diligence, our expected standards, that is sufficient to bring the action. Can I have a raise of hands to say if they agree with what I just said? To know if I'm hitting the right point here. Thank you. Okay, so I think that is very important and worth enunciating even more and elucidating in whatever report we come up with, because I think there is a lot of confusion in the community about what it is that we actually have to do. And there were some things in the report that I had in terms of explaining our task that I have some questions about as well. Holly Lance in her report emphasize that it's important to create a process that does not have a chilling effect on the community, that there should be a fairly well-defined list of considerations, and that perhaps what the guidelines that we create should be for all discussions, not just with the board. And that's, I have to tell you, a question that was raised in my mind. Well, what do you mean guidelines for all discussions? I don't think necessarily this is about guidelines for discussions as much as it is about guidelines for how we rationally move to remove a non-performing or a malfeasant board member rather than discussions. I mean, we have ICANN standards of community behavior for participating in work groups and discussions. So I am curious if any of those who read the report and who were initially in the Workstream 1 conversations about this could create some clarity around what do we mean to create guidelines for all discussions, not with the board? Do we mean removing anybody in a position, a volunteer position within ICANN, not a staff member? Because I personally think they're two separate issues, and I don't think I would be so concerned about these standards as applying to anybody but interactions between the community and the board. I'm going to, Alan?
No, it's a new hand. Certainly some groups within ICANN have rules and processes for removing people. Certainly the ALAC does. And, you know, those are within our own domain. We're allowed to set our rules, and obviously we're held to following them. Other groups, I suspect, have no such rules at all, and I'm not quite sure what they would do if they wanted to remove someone, if they could or not. So this is very much about directors and how the process would unfold if we're trying to remove a specific director appointed by an ACSO, the NOMCOM directors, or, in fact, the whole board. It's important to remember that directors act in the interest of the corporation. And again, I'll use at large as the example, but I presume it implies for the other ones, for all of the other appointed directors. We pick a director at least partially because we believe that director shares common values with us. We would probably be stupid to pick someone who, outwardly and clearly opposes everything we stand for. Well, why would we do that? Similarly, the NOMCOM appoints people who they believe would be in the best interest of ICANN as a whole to have as a director. Removal would be if we believe those rationales are no longer true. Implicitly one reason or another. We've changed our mind or we've changed the minds of whoever did the original appointment to rescind that appointment. And now we're talking about the process by which we could do that. So the director for at large is not obliged to represent us. As a matter of fact, the director is not allowed to represent us because in her case, the fiduciary duty is towards ICANN, not at large. But nevertheless, there was a history of how that person is appointed, and a change in circumstances may cause us to rescind or want to rescind that appointment. So that's
okay,
how I look at it.
Okay. I actually think that puts a level of complication in this, and we'll have to talk about how we address that, because I think that, my personal view is that once you appoint a board member and their fiduciary does shift to the corporation in a different way than as a volunteer from the community. To Avery's point in the chat, board or paid members of the community, unlike other participants. I would actually ask Avery to expound on that a little bit, because my understanding is that the board is given per diem like other community members. Perhaps they're paid higher per diem or they're in a nicer hotel, but that generally speaking they serve as volunteers, and this payment is really a per diem rather than for time. If I misunderstand that, I certainly would like some clarification of that. And then to Aubrey's question about what we mean by good faith, the way I would interpret good faith is, have we acted diligently? Have we done our homework? Have we followed our own guidelines and procedures that we will set up and that hopefully the CCWG will approve our recommendations and that they will get approved at the board level, that this is an understanding that this is how the procedure and the behavior will be conducted, and failure to follow these procedures then become not good faith. It's not an act of good faith unless the procedures have been followed. So I was just wondering, Avery, if you wanted to comment more about your comment, board or paid members of the community and those other participants.
Sure.
Thank you.
Right. I don't know that it necessarily matters, but the reason I brought it – oh, and this is Avery speaking. The reason I brought it up is because we were comparing them to other volunteers. And, yes, Robin is absolutely correct. Our only remit is directors. But mm-hmm. to go even further, mm-hmm. I don't think we can compare them, partially because of the authority they hold, which no other volunteer has. Every other volunteer makes recommendations. NomCom may be a little bit different, but every other volunteer just makes recommendations or gives advice, cannot make decisions, certainly decisions that are binding in any sense. But it is also the case, I believe, I don't think I'm wrong about this, that all board members are enabled to get I don't know whether it's called an honorarium. I don't think it's properly called a salary. But they do get a chunk of change in the $30,000 a year range for their service if they are willing to accept it. So whether they accept it or not, it is a paid position. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification. Avery, I see Rinalia used the term compensation. Cheryl used the word stipend. So there is some measure of compensation, if not a salary. Thank you. So it seems like we do have an agreement about what the task is. The task is about standard behaviors from the community, not standard behaviors from the board. And I think just having that clarification up front will help inform the rest of the work. The next one, does anybody else have anything to want to say in terms of explaining the task, at least lightly, in this first call? Anything that we may be missing before I move on? Aubrey, is that an old hand, new hand? Okay, I'm going to say it's an old hand. And I'm going to go to number four on the agenda, and that is expectation for deliverables. Those of you who are other work groups may have seen this information before, but we are expected to produce a report. That report will go to the CCWG plenary, and then it will go out, depending on the feedback we get from the plenary, it will then go out for public consideration and feedback. The format of the report is prescribed here: an executive summary, a description of the issue, the current state of play, the supplemental report, which will, I presume is a staff report that we're reading. Brenda, if you could clarify if there's any other reports, but I took that to mean the supplemental report was a staff report prepared after the submission of the Workstream 1 proposals. Recommendations, what we recommend. We should here keep that simple, and we should keep it clear, and the rationale for these recommendations. And then we need to assess our recommendations. Have they met the NTIA criteria? Are the recommendations compliant with the recommendations from Workstream 1? I'm looking in the chat. Again, we're chatting a little more about what the compensation is, whether or not it's taxable. I guess the conclusion that we could draw here is, well, there is some payment, and certainly not payment commensurate with hours and amount of time, that at most it would be looked at as more like an honorarium rather than an actual salary or payment in exchange for services. That's probably a good way to categorize it. So the report that we're looking to do is to be drafted by the team. It's not to be drafted by the staff. As rapporteur, of course, I'm taking the responsibility of making sure that gets done, coordinate it, and perhaps even do the first draft for the group to look at. We may also decide perhaps we want to take parts, break this report up into three different sections once we have agreement from the group, or create an outline. But we can talk about that as part of a work plan moving forward. After looking at our deliverable, I have a fifth item here called Special Concerns of the Group. And here I wanted to get feedback from the group based on reading the report, conversations we started, whether there's any special concerns that we should note up front in terms of how we are getting the work done. And I have a concern as a rapporteur. I had sent to this group the PowerPoint presentation that was given to the rapporteurs into the expectations of how the groups are to be run, the work product to be produced, and the time frames in which they were produced. One of the proposed methods of working was to determine whether the issue that we're looking at would be considered a lighter topic or a heavier topic. Lighter topics are expected to take faster. Actually, according to the proposed schedule, we would have already had a draft of our recommendations by now. But I will tell you that I made an executive decision in this case by letting us have August off and not scheduling calls in August. When I sent out requests for interest in terms of scheduling meetings, scheduling times, there were issues of people not responding. Doodle poll that I sent out apparently didn't get sent out to everybody or may not get sent out at all. We're not sure what happened. But my queries to the group about getting started in August and suggestions we're meeting was met with a low volume of enthusiasm. So that being said, I thought it might be wise to just let us start a little later, but let us start fresh having had the summer off. And I think there's plenty of time to get the work done. That being said, do we consider this as a group a lighter topic or a simpler topic? What I might do is there's a schedule here that for lighter topics that we should have our final output in January 2017, and for heavier topics, push out the due date to June or July of 2017 rather than January. And I wanted to get a sense from the people on this call in terms of the amount of work involved, whether you consider this a lighter or heavier subject. Anybody like to opine? Alan.
Thank you. I think it's a lighter subject, but at the same time, I think it's one of lesser importance compared to some of the things that many of us are involved in many of the Workstream 2 groups. And this is one I think we could do at a more leisurely pace and we won't suffer from it. So although I don't think it's one of the more onerous and complex ones, I think it's one which could do with a lower level of work. And that puts it perhaps into the same time frame as the ones which have a farther out target. That's my take anyway. But I'm looking to try to make my life my life more sane. Thank you.
Right, I understand that and appreciate that. I know that Aubrey and Robin and actually I think almost everybody on this call is involved in more than one subgroup, except for myself. I made the decision that if I were to be a rapporteur that I would solely focus on on one topic rather than try to engross myself in many. Particularly because I'm from a membership organization and my members are monitoring and, in fact, chairing some of the other groups. But, yes, if we feel as a team that we want to go at a slower pace, even though we may be considered a lighter subject, I don't necessarily have a problem with that, but I certainly would want to report that to the plenary at this point so they understand. Cheryl, I see your hand is up.
Thanks, Laurie. Cheryl Langdonoff for the record. I agree with that it's a less complex issue. Hopefully I should touch wood when I say that, shouldn't I, at DICAN meeting. I'm unsure that we shouldn't try and aim for the January because of that. For the same rationale as Alan was giving, but with a different outcome, I suppose, I just see, and I'm committed to all of the groups as well, and repertoire in one of them. Our more complex material is going to be at the heavy drafting, redrafting and deliberation end, leading up to the June, July, planned endpoints. And I think if we can get at least have a good go at getting this work put to bed into the January timeframe, that may allow us to do our drafting and final deliberations whilst the rest of the topics, which are more complicated, are still, you know, fluffing about. I had to watch myself there. I may have said something inappropriate for the transcript record. Fluffing about. Yeah. There we are. I'll stop now before I say something even I might regret.
We could always bleep it out, I think. I'm not sure. I don't know if there's been a bleep. Does anybody else have any opinions on this? I think we certainly can get the bones together. I think by head you're bad, honestly. I mean, we have calls scheduled for every week. I'm not committed to keeping the calls to an hour long. If we don't have an hour's worth of work, we don't have an hour's worth of work. But I would like to keep the timing, you know, to keep the times reserved if we do need the times. But I don't, yeah, as efficiently we could do this, we could do this. So I guess my next question then would go to the next issue on the agenda, which is establishing a work plan here. We could do this a couple of different ways. I mean, one way is we could go back and basically ask the members of this group independently to draft what you think the guidelines ought to be. Forget about the whole report, but this is what happened. There is a board member. Something has happened. Whatever that something is, it doesn't even seem to really matter, but there is a board behavior that is warranting at least investigation, if not an actual move to remove this member. And will it make it – the other question I just kind of popped in my head too, will it make a difference whether we're aiming to remove an individual – a group of individuals or jump the board? Maybe that would that make a difference? I don't know. But perhaps if everybody creates a list, contributes a list to the listserv, that I could just start, you know, collating it together to put the bones. That might be the easiest way. Alan, you have your hand up.
Yeah, my hand was up regarding timing. I was just going to add the comment that since there's just barely a month after we get back from Hyderabad until many people start disappearing or becoming less available for the, you know, Christmas and year and holidays, January 17th may be a bit tight, but certainly there's no reason to wait till July. So just
right. I mean, maybe we aim for, you know, Copenhagen is the
Or even February, but all I'm saying is January 17th may be a bit tight, but it shouldn't take months and months after that.
Okay. I like Cheryl. Let's have a go.
Yep.
Let's have a go. Okay. So at this point, I've explained about the regular calls. We've expressed some concerns we have. We've explained the task. We have the outline for the deliverables. So I am now interested in sort of how we think we might want to do this work plan. I don't know. I'm kind of open to the suggestion that if we take the next week to think about, you know, what do we think? You read the report, go back to the – just as individuals, group what we think is the right process, send them all to the list, and I will collate them into an initial draft. I'm willing to do that. And then we could talk about it, unless someone has another idea about how to do this. And I will take it upon myself, at least, to start the report to the extent that I can start drafting the description of the issues, right? Because that's just, here's where we are, this is what our report said. So that I will volunteer to do right away, to do a description of the issue. And what I'd like to do that is take the next week and come up with some recommendations independently, group them together, and start collating them. Once we have them, then we can go on to the assessment phase. And does anybody have any sense of, you know, how much time you think it would take? We'll get the recommendations or suggested recommendations drafted, whether it would take 2, 3, 4 calls to get them to a place where then we would want to assess them. Or another approach is if we come up with the bones in the first week or so, when you submit your suggestions, do you want at the same time submit an assessment? Here's my suggestion. My suggestion is that we have this tiered step process, and there's levels of investigation, and this is how it meets the NTIA criteria, and this is how it complies with Workstream 1. Or would you rather just get the recommendations all done and then go to the assessment? Or one recommendation, assess the recommendation, one recommendation, assess the recommendation. We could do it either way. Any thoughts? No thoughts. Preferences? Okay, maybe we just take a vote at this point for those who would prefer to do the recommendations first and the assessment later, raise your hand, versus doing the recommendations and assessment of each recommendation as you propose it. Okay, am I not asking the question clearly?
Laurie, it's Alan. There's a limited number of people on this call to start with. So I would suspect you present the options via an email, and hopefully we can get some response that way, and at least we know everyone on the mailing list has had a chance to look at it rather than trying to make a decision right now.
That's a good suggestion. Thank you. I will do that. I will tell you that I'm inclined to just make the recommendations, what we feel would be appropriate based on our own personal knowledge, history. I feel like I have a unique knowledge in terms of, as I said, my just working with nonprofit boards as a council. And I know there's other people here with unique knowledge based on how much input they had in the CCWG or their own activity as a board member, perhaps in another venue. I do want to ask Renalia and Lito if you'll also be submitting recommendations, or at this point you would be more observing, because I actually would be interested in hearing what your recommendations would be, but I'm not sure in this context whether or not you had anticipated making recommendations. Okay, I see what Renalia's answer. We will consult with the board and get back to you.
Thank you, Larry.
Fine,
I don't think I have any.
Yes, Lito?
Yes. Yes, I was going to say something like that. We don't have any recommendations at this point. We'll get back to you if we get
that. Yes, I think it would be extremely helpful to have board input at this stage and have a collective thinking about this so that there's nothing that I know you're here to liaise to the board, so nothing that should come as a surprise to the board. But having that early input, I think, would be extremely helpful to the group. Okay, so I will ask this group for 2 follow-up items. 1, to think about what your recommendations would be. And when you think about them, 2, submit them to the list, just so we could start the dialogue. How we collate them moving forward, we'll figure out. And at the same time, I will well, you know what, maybe we need to go back and I need to do my job first, and that would be to ask the list which way we're going to do this. So let's reverse the homework. I will send a request to the list asking which way they prefer to submit recommendations, but at the same time I will ask this group to start thinking about specific recommendations and be ready to submit something within the next week to 10 days to the list. Thank you, Renalia. I know the board is particularly busy. I know there's a lot of issues around the transition at the moment. Washington right now is just a buzz. There's developments that I
are certainly interesting, to say the least. And certainly, I will tell you just anecdotally, we follow these issues very closely. INSA's own lobbyist, and I did not think that the delay would get as far, or the proposed delay would get as far as it has, and we support this transition, so we're in a little bit of shock as well. It seems to be gaining more ground, so everybody's watching. But that said, I don't expect this to slow down any of the work we're doing, and I'm still quite hopeful that at the end of the day, right minds will prevail and that transition will happen on October 1, but we're watching. That being said, yes, as soon as the board could provide something, that would be helpful. But to the rest of the group as well, the next 7 to 10 days, I think, would be a good pegging point in terms of getting recommendations up, getting the bones started. It's 3:50. I'm going to ask if there's any other business, if anybody would like to raise any other issues, if there's anything we discussed that's confusing that we should go back and reiterate. So I'm going to ask how many people would like to end the call now. Do I see a show of hands for that?
Suddenly you have,
yes,
suddenly we're alive.
Yes, suddenly everybody's alive. Okay. All right. Well, I think this was a very productive first call. I think we got, you know, some key questions really out of the way quickly, which is great. And I know that we're a small team, but we are a power team. And when you see who's on this list, it's some of really the most engaged and the most knowledgeable people we have at ICANN. So, again, I'm really honored to be coordinating the group and really look forward to producing an excellent work product that we can be proud of. So have a great week. We'll reconvene in a week, and I will send an update to the list, and I will prepare my report for the plenary. So thank you.
Thanks,
Laurie.
Thank you,
and thank you for volunteering.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.